Thanks for checking out the Reveal Vineyard podcast. Our mission is simple. Find God, find others, find yourself. That's it. We hope through these conversations, your spirit will be stirred. For more information on Reveal, you can visit our website at www.revealvineyard.com.
Well, an odd service today, and I appreciate you coming out. You know, I'm going to be sharing some things purely from my heart today. And if you're a guest here, I kind of weighed this and thought, is this the best message? But then I thought, you know, it might be good for to see some transparency with a pastor. I might tell you a little bit about who I am and who we are as a church and what we're about. Whenever you start a church, it is with mixed emotions. And there is this excitement that comes with it, and this stepping into this moment of faith where you're kind of betting it all on what you think God is calling you to do. And then on the other side of that faith, there's this idea of fear that what if I missed it, and what if I'm wrong, and what if this all collapses. And we experienced that 6 years ago when we started Reveal. There is a great joy in moving forward with what God has placed upon your heart and given you vision for, and then there's sorrow in leaving people that you've loved and served with and done church together with for, you know, my case, almost 20 years, and my wife's case, 15, 16 years. There was great gratitude in those who decided 6 years ago to come with us, and along with that gratitude, there's humility and also some confusion as to why are you coming with us? And there would be those that would come up and say, hey, you know, we've been praying about it, and we decided that we're going to go with you to start this new church plant 6 years ago called Reveal. And my response to most people was, can I ask you why? Because I'm not sure if I would go with me. And you know, you're leaving a great church with a great pastor. And I had people, when we started the church, who would say, are you trying to talk me out of coming with you? And it wasn't I was trying to talk them out. I wanted them to really understand, you know, we're taking a gamble here. And we're taking a risk. And, you know, Vineyard North, the church that we came from, you know, was a great church with, gosh, probably one of the, you know, top 500 leaders in the U.S. churches, in my opinion, anyways. I mean, he was an incredible leader. And so we gathered our team together and started prepping in early June of 2008 and started going through what our church would look like and what it would feel like. You can go to that title slide up there if you want to. What the church would look like and feel like and be like. And we made up all these plans. And then June 28th hit of 2008, our first service. We met in the movie theater, and it was like this wave that just picked up and just consumed us. And all of these ideas that you thought you had and that you knew and that you had planned, it was like suddenly you're flying by the seat of your pants and you're just trying to hang on and make sense of all of this. It would be like when, before you had children, when you think you knew what it was like to be a parent, and then you had your child and you're like, what the heck just happened, right? You're like, all the books, all the planning, it's useless to me. And in a real, very real sense, that's what it was like starting the church. And I remember after that first service, put everything away in the movie theater, which back then we tucked everything under the stage, and walked out, got in my car, shut the door. And the first thought that hit me was, I have to do this every Sunday for the rest of my life. And it wasn't where it was like a negative, it was just sobering that every 7 days now I have to reload a message in hopes of submitting something of value to you, in hopes of not boring you to death and putting you to sleep. And for some of you, I've yet to accomplish that goal. Because some of you, it's just the sound of my voice, it just soothes you and puts you to sleep. And my late Saturday night radio voice just somehow causes you to drift off to sleep into nowhere's land. And probably these comfortable seats don't help. And it was probably a month in, maybe 2 months, into stepping into the senior pastor role of a church that I realized that this position was going to be far more mentally, emotionally, and spiritually draining than I ever accounted for. And I served on a great staff for 14 years prior to starting Reveal, and I was on the executive staff and was in on the planning and the shaping of who we were as a church. I was the only other speaking pastor on staff, and so I was well aware of what it meant to speak to, you know, large crowds. And then we were a church of 3,000 back then, and so I thought I understood, and you know, we started off down this road, and about a month or two in, I called my pastor, who was Brian, and I said, "Hey, I just got to tell you something, that this is far more consuming and difficult than I ever imagined." And there was silence on the other end that was then followed by laughter. And not just a chuckle, but this belly laugh. And the first thing he said is, "Marty, nobody knows what it's like until you step in those shoes." And then he told me a story about a pig and a chicken. And I remember thinking, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. It's not why I called you. And he told me about this pig and a chicken that's in the barn, and the farmer was getting ready for breakfast. And the chicken all of a sudden was very anxious, and it's going back and forth in the barn, and it's, you know, clucking, and it's just anxiety ridden, and it's nervous, and the farmer's getting ready for breakfast. And finally the pig says, "Why are you so anxious? You're just giving an egg for breakfast. I'm giving my life." And my pastor said, "Marty, not to diminish what you've done, but for 14 years, you've given an egg. And now, you're giving your life." And I thought, I will never judge a story before I understand what it's about. And he said, "You know, you've served us well, and you were I was good at what I did." I mean, I don't say that in a prideful way. Don't misunderstand me. But he said, "You were giving eggs, and now you're giving your life." And so for 6 years, for you are the church, I am the church. I have tried to not bring you eggs. And I've tried and have committed to giving my life. And with that, the pressure is a completely different world than being an associate pastor under another pastor. You know, the pressure of setting the vision and setting the tone and hearing from God. And when you're under another pastor and you give a three-week series that flops, everybody knows the senior pastor will be back next week, you know, or the week after. So, yeah, we can put up with this guy for a little bit. Or when, you know, budgets are down and there's people's lives that you love at stake, and you know, you're in a staff meeting and Brian would say, you know, "Hey, budgets are giving is down." And you would just be like, "It'll all work out." I guess the best way, if you've ever been an employee of a business versus if you ever owned a business, maybe that would be something that would resonate with you, that you go to sleep with a far greater pressure upon you than when you were just an employee. And so into our church life, realizing this was going to be far more difficult on me. And then you also realize that when you start a church that everybody is a church expert. And everybody knows exactly what a church should look like and what a church should do and how it should function. And you know, everyone has an opinion. And out of their love for me, they were quick to share their opinion. And some people would be upset because why are we spending money on picnics after Sunday? And other people would say, what we really need is more picnics on Sunday. And there is this, you know, this tension that you live in. Not to mention that maybe more than any other area, there are enormous books and media presentations and magazines and professionals and seminars that will tell you exactly what your church should look like and how it should function and what it means, 6 easy steps to be the church that God wants you to be. And so this is kind of what you step into. About 3 years into our church, my tank began to run low. And so I took preventative measures for it and started doing things that kind of refuel me and replenish me. And Started coaching soccer at a local high school, and it was different than, you know, I'm not laying eggs. I dove into this. I committed my life to what God's called me to, and in a very real way, I was like, I need something outside of church just to kind of refuel, and so I started coaching soccer and, you know, got a motorcycle and, you know, did some things like that I enjoy, and we moved along as a church. And about 18 months ago, and I know this might seem odd to you, but this is the confession of a pastor. About 18 months ago, I had to make some really difficult decisions as the lead pastor here. And I don't, you know, when I introduce myself to you, I introduce myself as one of the pastors. I never call myself the senior pastor, but there is responsibility that comes with the position that I had. And I had to make some difficult decisions regarding some employees and some really key volunteers that were on our staff. And these were not just people that worked for me or volunteered for me or for our church. These are people that I've done life with, some of them for the last 14 years. Our children grew up together, and I was invested in them, and we had, you know, relationship, and I loved them and their family. And so to step in, to have to make some really difficult decisions, put me in a position that I never wanted to be in as a pastor. If you don't know me, I hate church politics. I got bigger things to worry about, like bringing people to Jesus, than to try to get people on my side or their side and you know, trying to spin things. I don't do politics. And yet, it put me in a position to be something I never wanted to be, and that was the bad guy. And I've told you before that I'm a peacemaker, and I just want us all to get along and all of us to do life together, and I'm quick to forgive. And yet, man, I had to make some decisions that families left the church over. It was devastating to me, asked my wife, beyond what you will realize. And to this day, feel like I had to make those decisions. Think they were best for our church. I didn't like how they ended up. Thankfully, some of those relationships are starting to be restored. I'm grateful for that. And then what happens is the church begins to see what happened, and so-and-so left, and so-and-so's talking, and they would come to me and say, what's going on? So-and-so is hurt, and what happened? And it puts you in a position where you can either spin things to try to get people on my side, which is not who I am. And then the other side was that there were some things that as a pastor, I knew that they didn't need to know, and I couldn't tell them, and I know they're hurt, and I feel horrible about it, and I couldn't tell them why. And on some of the areas where I made mistakes because I don't spin things, I'm transparent before you. I always have been. And in some of the situations, I said, here's where I blew it. I needed to make the decision. I felt like I made the right decision. Some of these decisions I wrestled with for a year and a half with lots of counsel and said, here's why I made the decision, but here's where I failed them. And I told them, I let them down in this area, and I should have been more engaged with them in this area. And I mean, I'll confess to you where I've made mistakes. And I tell you that it was like someone took a screwdriver and shoved it into my emotional, spiritual gas tank and just started dripping the fuel out. About a year ago, A guy who attended our church was a member, and he had a terminal illness that was going to take, didn't know how long he would make it. I mean, it could be 2 years, it could be 20 years, and his wife suddenly got sick, and we walked him and his wife through her final days, and he continued to attend and had to shortly after move away up north to live with family because he just couldn't manage on his own because of the sickness. And he called me one day and started asking him, said, my daughter wants to know what happens if you commit suicide. and said, I didn't know what to tell her. So I thought, you know, you're still my pastor, and I know I'm a long way away, and I, you know, can only make it down once every, you know, 4, 5, 6 months. But I said, what are your thoughts on that? And you know, we had a conversation on it, and I didn't catch that he was talking about himself. And about 2 hours after that conversation, he took his life. Now, I know this isn't about me when someone does that, believe me. I understand. But when you're not giving an egg and you're trying to give your life, it was like another screwdriver went in, and I was angry and thought I've been betrayed and I was used. And then the thoughts of, what kind of pastor doesn't catch that someone's talking about himself? And how did I let him down? And man, I went into myself, and I probably didn't say 10 words to my family for, I don't know how long it was. And I remember I was sitting in our chair, it used to be my wife's chair, but I've since held it hostage and took it for myself. And I was sitting in the chair, and I remember thinking, this is what will do me in. This is the straw that it's just, I remember praying and telling God, I don't want to do this anymore. I realized you probably don't get it. The best way I could say is that when your children are in a situation that it is beyond what you can almost bear. And that's because I'm not giving an egg, I gave my life. That's what it's like in this position. And I'm not saying any of that for sympathy. It's a confession of a pastor. And I just said, I don't want this anymore. And at that time, God just felt miles and miles away from me, which was a new experience for me. Because since I was a child, I had this affinity for the things of God, and I sensed God's presence always. Even without any church upbringing, at 5, 6, 7 years old, I put myself to sleep by making up Christian songs about God. No church background, it's just what I did. 11 years old, and a friend of mine was asking me to do something that would have gotten us into some trouble. And I was like, nah, I don't want to do it. And he said, your parents aren't going to see. And my response at 11 years old, with no church background, really, I said, yeah, but God will notice it. And then at 14 years old, I walked into a church, and it was like electric. And it was all of the things that I kind of sensed, but I wasn't sure what was going on. It was like, that was it. And I walked in, I was like, this is everything that I thought and felt, like I was home. And that's where I learned about Jesus and what he did on the cross. And I jumped in, and it was discipled, and it was like I went on that road, and I never looked back. And I always sensed the presence of God. And I don't say this in an arrogant way at all, but I always felt like there was a strong measure of God's favor that was on me for whatever reason. And then at 45, there was nothing. I mean, I prayed, and it's like you're praying to a wall. There's nothing there. I didn't sense God. I didn't hear God. And so, you know, that was about a year of really looking and searching and wondering, where do we go? At that point, I knew something was wrong within me. And I also knew at that point that something had to change in our church. And I told my wife, I was like, Sheila, there's something that needs to change, and I don't know what it is because God's not speaking to me. He's not leading. There's no guidance. And you know. And so I limped along. I did what I could. I got a mentor, someone who has been a pastor for years, to start to meet with me and look in after me and challenge me on some areas and, you know, did what I could do. About 6 months ago, I started to hit bottom. And most nights, I went to bed and I'd audibly moan because of the anguish that was in my soul. And when you're not giving eggs, I carry a large part of what you go through. And I genuinely care for your health and your marriage and your life. And some of you are going through situations that are life-ending. And to, you know, to walk people through those things, it's difficult. And I would go to bed at night and I would audibly moan just the anguish in my soul. And then when it got quiet and my brain started firing, the thoughts were just rapid fire of, you know, everything from, all right, well, if God is done with me, then what do I do with my life? I'm 40, you know, 6 years old, and who's going to hire a 46-year-old guy? And I mean, as good looking as I am, I can't model anymore. And not that I ever modeled, that was a joke. And sometimes the thoughts would come so quickly, I would speak out, stop it. And my wife would just put her hand on my chest. She knew where I was going through. And 4 months ago, I find myself flipping through the want ads. And my prayer to God was, I can't do this anymore. You know, it's just, it's too heavy to bear. The average lifespan of a senior pastor is 5 years, and then they're out. And I tell you this, I don't want you to feel sorry for me. This is all leading somewhere, I promise you. But this is where I was at. And at that time, I never felt like God was releasing me from his calling. And someone told me when I was young that whenever you don't understand the call of God or see the lead of God or feel the prompting of God, that your old orders are standing orders. And they said, you go back to the last thing that you heard God say, and you, with tenacity, you stand on those last orders that God gave you. And so that's, you know, what I did. And led me on a journey, all that to say, of beginning to, you know, seek God. And what happened? Where did the joy of ministry depart? What happened within me? Why did this take such a toll upon me and kind of shrivel me and begin to literally, you know, destroy me? And I found myself going through an exercise where I started to write down the core values of what has always been placed within me. And these are things going back to when, you know, 14, 20, 25, where God placed things in me and other people have spoke things into my life. And these were not just values, because we all have values of things that we say, yeah, that's important. But I started to write down what I labeled them as the hills that I die on. That those things that have been so part of me, that if I'm not part of them, they literally start to destroy who I am, and they are so important to me that I'm willing to give my life to see that this hill in my life is made manifest. That it's part of who I am. And I would write, and I would, you know, this one was a good value, and, you know, a couple days later, I'm thinking that's really not a hill that I would die on, and I'd, you know, replace it. And there's a friend of mine who is a great writer, and I would send him things to say, can you look this over? And he'd send back some thoughts, and I'd send him, we'd edit back and forth, and, you know, until we were both sick of it. And I finally got to that point of where, all right, these are the 10 hills in me. This is the core of who I am. There's other things that I value, but this is what God has deposited in me so strongly that if I'm not a part of this, then I may as well just, quote, get out of the game. And I looked at these 10 hills that I die on, and I asked myself the difficult question. It might be a good practice for you to do. What are the hills? What are the core things that you're about? Mine wasn't towards my family. It was literally, it was just ministry and towards God. That's what I focused on. And out of those 10 hills, I asked myself, am I living out of those hills? Meaning, do they reflect, does my life reflect those things? And the more difficult question was, am I leading out of those hills? See, it's really easy to get the waters muddied when you're leading a church, because it's very easy to be reactionary to what is going on. The job is literally never done. There's always more that can be done, always more people that can be loved, cared for, looked in after, always another sermon to be written. And sometimes the waters get muddied. And I looked at these hills, and the thought came to me. And I think it was God. I won't say, 100%. It wasn't an audible voice. I'm looking at these hills, and I thought, that's your church. And that is what the church needs to be and to be about, and that's the clarity, and that's kind of the confusion that I've struggled with, and telling my wife something is off and wasn't sure what it was, and I looked at these hills and I was like, that's it. I mean, that's what it is. And so I began to ask myself in prayer, asking God, well, how did I drift off of these things that were such a core in who I am for the last 25, 35 years, some of them? How did I drift away from those things? And it sent me on a journey to realize some areas that I have failed you in. Because I'm a peacemaker, if you would look at there being 100 people in the church, I place myself in the middle of those 100 people. And in a way, I tried to corral my arms around them and just said, come on, let's just stay together, all 100 of us. We can do this thing and we can go on this faith journey together. And wherever the 100 people moved, I kind of went with them and positioned myself in the middle of them in hopes of corralling everyone together and keeping us together. And my thinking was that if we're just around the things of God long enough, that we'll all move together towards the things of God. And so, in a way, I pastored like that. Positioned myself in 100 people. I'm a peacemaker. I want us all, let's do this kingdom thing together. The problem is, it doesn't work. Because in that, when I'm positioning myself in the middle of the 100, I'm kind of, someone would stray and I'd move that way and say, no, come on back. And there's a measure of pastoral leadership that is that, grabbing those that are straying and bringing them back in. But instead of me being in the center and abandoning some of the hills that I say are that important to me, I could not do that because I was constantly in the middle of the 100 saying, come on, we can do this together. Let's keep it together. And what needed to happen was that I start off on a path based upon the hills that I die on, because really the hills that I die on are the hills that Reveal will die on. You may not like my hills, but that's the one advantage of being the senior pastor. I get to determine the hills. And what needed to happen was me setting off on a path, and out of the 100, whoever wanted to come with will come with. I heard someone say once that if you take 100 people and ask them, Christians, how many of you believe that Jesus is the way of salvation? 100 Christians are going to raise their hand. And then if you ask out of those 100 people that believe that Jesus is the way of salvation, how many of you believe that enough that you are willing to invite someone back to church next week because Jesus really is the way, the truth, and the life as he speaks? And out of that 100, you may have 80 that say, yeah, I'm willing to be a part of that and start inviting people because Jesus is that important. And then out of that 80, if you say, okay, how many of you believe that enough that you are willing to restructure your time, that you will become a volunteer because Jesus really matters that much? And out of that 80, you're down to 40. That would say, yeah, I would do that. And then out of that 40, say, okay, how many believe that Jesus really is the answer and the way, the truth, and life enough that you're willing to restructure your finances to give to the mission that Jesus is about? And then traditionally, you're down to 25 people that would say, yeah, I'm willing to do that. And I've been trying to corral the 100, and it kicked my butt. And what needs to happen is that I set the pace based upon the hills that I die on. And whoever wants to come with is going to come with. And those that hang behind, I'll be glad to come back and say, hey, you need to come with us. This is where we're going. This is the hills that we die on. And the pastor side of me, the peacemaker side of me, that knows that some people are going to stay behind, that kills me. But the leading part of me says it is what it is going to be. See, for 6 years, I have taken upon every burden in this church. And for 6 years, I've placed myself in the middle of you. And while I didn't water down the gospel message, I don't think I did that. I was very much afraid to make the big ask of you, as Bill Hybel says. Because of the ways that some churches have led and some pastors have led and given a bad name to all kinds of Christianity. And so I placed myself in the middle of you and just said, come on, let's just stay together. We'll keep together. And if we're around God long enough, he will then move us and those bigger things that need to be asked of us as a church, then you'll start to do that on your own. And it doesn't work. And I failed you in that. And I failed myself in that. I'm a peacemaker. I would love us for all to be together in this. But here's what God told me. Open hands from this time forward. See, because as a pastor, I would place it upon myself for the results of what takes place right now. This was given 4 months ago. The results of how you respond would be, I have placed upon me. And I felt like God released me of that and said, all that I'm asking you to do is put your hands to the plow, the 10 hills that you die on, and you leave the results to me. So what that means is some of you may not like it. What that means is that I can't bear the burdens alone. Some of you are exceptional at doing this with me. You're exceptional at it. Listen to me very carefully. I will not be the pastor of a church where the pastor is the key man anymore. This days of when Marty doesn't speak, nobody shows up, knock it off. You in this for Jesus or you in it for me? Answer that question. The days where I'm afraid to give you the big ask because I don't want you to run off and I don't want you to associate me with some pastors that were corrupt or use strong arm tactics, I can't answer for what other pastors have done. All I can answer for is how I've modeled my life for you. In 6 years, we've talked about money 2 or 3 times. The last 2 weeks, our giving was lower than it's ever been in 6 years. Woohoo! So here's where I'm at. 3 weeks ago, I need you to know, 3 weeks ago, maybe a little longer, I accepted a position to be the senior pastor of Reveal Church. Now, you shouldn't applaud at that because that was kind of cheesy, but listen, an odd service, I know, but I've always told you, I can't hide things from you. It's not who I am. We have to be a church that we understand that to be part of the kingdom of God is going to require some sacrifices. And I'm asking you that while you're not stepping in to a senior pastor's role, I'm asking that you'd at least start to give an egg. And some of you, because whether you're a paid pastor or whether you have a title, some of you, you've been the pig and you've given your life. And some of you, the stirring of God on you is right now to do more than just lay an egg, but to start to give your life for people that their burdens you will carry and you're going to go above and beyond because God says, you're a pig. You know, we did this kingdom challenge. Let me have the band come up. We did this kingdom challenge. And some of the reports of people saying, I was in, Circle K, and started to talk to somebody and began to pray for them and ask that God would show up and that God's kingdom would break in, and people who are praying for people in hospitals and you know, on the sides of roads, and high schoolers that are telling their friends, what do you think about God? And they say, I'm not sure about God. And they would say, I'm going to pray that God would reveal himself to you. And people taking risks. That needs to be us. And so we're setting off on a new course. 10 hills that I die on. 10 hills that as a church we will die on. And if you want to know what those hills are, you need to come back next week. Now here's what I know that's going to happen. Some of you, you're not going to be back. It's not even because you don't agree. You love God. Once every 5 weeks, that's the norm of church attendance today in America. I don't want to pastor a church like that. I want our church to be about changing our portion of the world. And in order for that to happen, I cannot be the key person in all of this. And I'm asking you to start to lay an egg and to start to be the pig and to give yourself to something that is far greater than just ourselves. And so some big asks are going to be coming. I'm tired of the same people working in children's ministry. Church, it's not right. It's not right. And so if next week I turn around and there's 20 people surrounding me, those 20 people, we're going to change the world. Yes, sir. And if next week I turn around and there's 300 adults with me, we're going to change the world. Now, in a message like this, it's easy to read between the lines and think things that I didn't say. I've told you everything. Some of you, by the confessions of a pastor, you came because you thought there was going to be a juicy sin that was dropped. My wife has cheated on me. There's no secret sin. But I've allowed the greatest opportunity that God's called me into to also consume me and start to destroy me. I'm not alone in that. You know, 5 years for the average. So next week, I'm going to share with you some of all of the hills. Some of them I think I've done well on. We've done well on as a church. Some of them I have totally abandoned, and I'm embarrassed, and I had to repent over them. And I had to tell God, I won't abandon them anymore. And if it means things get a little messy or things seem a little odd, and if I turn around and out of the 100, 50 have left, I can't. I'll help you find another place. But I have to move forward. I would tell you this. I'm in a good place. It's been a year from hell, but I've preached to you, I've told you that God doesn't waste wilderness experiences. And when life is hard, that God can still lead and accomplish something. I've preached those things to you. And the odd thing is, in the last year, while I would preach them, in the back of my mind, I'm telling myself, believe what you're speaking. It's hard, right? But I feel like God is starting to speak and stir and move again, and it is refreshing to my soul. So next week, we start down that road and see what God would have for us. And I'm excited. And I sincerely believe, as I've told some people recently, I honestly believe the best days of Reveal are ahead of us. I sincerely believe that. And so we're going to close with a song, because I don't want this to be a downer upon us. It's actually a positive thing of where we're going and what God is going to stir in us. I hope you are back next week. Next week is going to be a great service for you to invite a friend to, because they're going to know, here's what we are about and here's where we are going. So I want you to stand with me. Lord, take everything that was implied, people think was implied, and take it away that the enemy would have no place here. And I ask that there would be a single focus on our church like we have never had before. And I speak upon our church congregation, those that say, "Reveal is my home," that we together begin to embrace the things that you have for us as a church community. And those who are exploring, those who aren't sure, God, keep bringing more people like that. More people who don't understand, that are want to understand, and more people who are far from you that need an opportunity to receive Jesus and to have sins forgiven, and bring those in and draw them in this direction that we're going. I would ask that mediocre Christianity among those here today, that you would begin to destroy it and rip it apart. And in me and in us as a church, would you begin to show your power? I pray in the name of Jesus, our faithful Savior. Amen. I appreciate you being here.